You're listening to a Sin podcast. You can listen to this show live by tuning your radio to 90.7 or online at sin.org.au.
We at Represent would like to acknowledge and pay our respects to the traditional owners on the land on which Sin operates, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sin Media respectfully acknowledges their ancestors and elders, past, present and emerging. We would also like to acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ancestors of the lands and waters across Australia where our content reaches. Sovereignty has never been ceded, it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Kids should go to school. That's what we're committed to.
Why do we want it? When do we want it now?
I haven't flip-flopped. I said no originally, then I said yes, then I have said no, and I've stuck to it.
I didn't need to do this. I've already done a lot of war for the election.
The English fought a civil war over this matter.
Don't deal with the nuance of the Canberra bubble.
I don't know what to do with it. We have so much money.
What we want is more learning in schools and less activism in schools.
Issues that perhaps may be controversial today, but 30 years from now, your children, your grandchildren are going to be thankful that you stood up for what was right.
Represent.
Represent.
Represent. You're listening to Represent.
You're listening to Represent. We're back for our... Fourth week of the year?
I believe it's the fourth.
Week of the year. I'm here with Casper and no one else. It is a very small studio today.
Declan's caught up with school today, I believe.
Yeah, I think Bridie's still teaching and who knows where Freddie is. He's abandoned us 4 weeks now.
Running thin today.
Yeah, very much so. But, you know, we've got heaps of content.
We're pushed through.
I'm trying to convince.
We're back here.
We are. But most importantly, how has your week been?
It's been good. It's been pretty hot, but so yesterday I was fortunate enough to get a ticket to go to the Matildas game.
Oh, yes.
And see us smash 10 past Uzbekistan. It was pretty impressive display from the Matildas. Like, it was good to see like 54,000 people there, I believe, as well. And I was looking up the attendances at Marvel and sort of, I think they've only capped it at, like, most of the sporting events only usually get to, I think there's 56,000 is the max they've ever fit there.
Okay, yeah.
So 54,000 is definitely a sellout.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's only a few tickets, like, or seats missing that you could see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's really good.
Slightly disappointing that it was a close match, though.
Yeah.
I think in the end, I was almost supporting Uzbekistan just to get them see them get a goal.
Yeah.
But my week. How about yours, no?
I always ask that question of other people and then go, I have no idea what I did this week. No, it's been lots of bits and pieces. It's been a bits and pieces week. I've been running around baking a lot. I've got a party on Saturday night. So I've made little TikTok biscuit teacups.
With all the icing?
No, with, like, you know, the we used, like, a bit of icing to join a TikTok biscuit to a marshmallow and a lifesaver thing and a freckle. I'd like to point out that lifesavers are now full circles. They're not circles with an empty middle. So these teacups have half circles on them, not little handles like they used to. But, I made those. I made jelly slice. I made a third thing, honey joys, and these little rolls that we love. And I'm making and freezing sausage rolls tonight. So it's been
that's a big
production
deal.
Line.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been good busy.
How many people are going to the party?
10, 15. We've got a couple of families.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. No, it'll be
exciting.
Fun. Yeah, very exciting. But no, okay, so we've got there's only two of us. So we don't have to get on with it super quickly today.
We can take our time.
But what I will do is we'll pop to a song. And then we'll read the news hits, which Declan is bringing to us from afar through our voices. And then we'll jump into some content. What are you bringing us today?
I'm here to talk about Spain from last week.
Yes.
Pretty keen on Spain. And it's a leap day today. We didn't acknowledge it from the start.
Happy leap day.
So we have some pretty interesting little things that have happened across history from leap days.
Yeah.
Or on leap days, should I say.
Leap day, February 29th.
Yeah, a few
29th.
Good stories coming up.
That'll be very good. And I've got lots to say about ASIO's speech the other night.
I think it's pretty breaking, right?
Yeah, about a former politician. And I've also got a lot to say about Guinea, which, my mistake, I read the card and said New Guinea last week, or Papua New Guinea last week, and it did not say that. It just said Guinea, which is a country in Western Africa, and I knew that, but I went, oh, no, I can't remember if I put both of them in. So I'm bringing you Guinea this week. One day we will pull out Papua New Guinea. Even though there's been interesting stuff happening there this week.
In Guinea or Papua New Guinea?
Papua New Guinea.
Okay.
Yeah, so come on, got to pull that one out today. All right, let's jump to a song. This is Shadow Range by Mitch Rowland. You're listening to Sin. We're back, and what song was that?
That was Julia Jacqueline, Pressure to Party.
Did you like that song?
I did like that song. I put that one down.
Yes, that was a good song. I had never heard it before. Now, we're just going to jump quickly to the news hits brought to us, written by Declan. So he's practically in the studio. Hope he's listening. Nice news hits, Declan. This is your news hit for Thursday, the 29th of February. Leap day. Albanese poll shock. Labor primary falls as government spruiks tax cuts. The South Australian government has signed an agreement to sell hydrogen to a company that owns the Whyalla Steelworks in the state's Upper Spencer Gulf. New data suggests that adults without concession cards might be finding it harder to find a GP that bulk bills. As more high-income households have shifted into the private rental market, low-income renters are struggling to compete and many are retreating into informal living arrangements. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has again declared the government won't do a deal with the Greens to pass its Help to Buy housing scheme, which the minor party says will make Australia's housing crisis worse. This week, Scott Morrison has left politics. WA leader Libby Metam dismisses her deputy leader Steve Thomas after it emerges he used disgraced former Premier Brian Burke as a middleman to secure a meeting. Mandating COVID-19 vaccines for some Queensland frontline workers was found to be unlawful, a judge rules in Queensland. Mark Butler held a press conference to launch the government's new influencer-led anti-vaping campaign. There'll be definitely some more to talk about, just side note, on vaping over the next couple of weeks. There's with bans and laws coming into play tomorrow. Victoria has been facing extreme weather conditions as Ballarat, Beaufort and Dureal fires are still out of control. Firefighters have spent the night battling two bushfires in Victoria's west after a tent stay for thousands of residents as temperatures soared across the state and more than 30,000 people were told to evacuate as a precaution due to the catastrophic fire danger rating in the Wimmera region. And that's your news. It was very hot yesterday.
It was very hot, yeah.
It was very hot, but I'm glad we didn't have storms because I think there was a report this morning to say because we didn't have the storms, we're at less risk because there wasn't the ammunition for a fire.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, leap day.
Leap day. So here we go, 2024. So looking into leap day, I've compiled a few of the things that have happened over history. We should probably start by talking about how Leap Day was sort of formed. Leap Day originally was thought up by Julius Caesar and the astronomer that he worked with at the time. So together, him and the astronomer, who I've forgotten the name of, but I believe it's Cygnesis, might be getting that wrong, but along those lines, such stuff you'd like to know. Together they organised Leap Day to get the Julian calendar. They've worked out later that it was slightly wrong in their calculations, so it's been updated since, and that's the calendar that we have today now. But throughout history, there's a few major things that have happened, and then we've got a little anecdote from Unia about some big, big gossip that happened on Leap Day a while ago. So to go through it, the first Salem witch trial warrants were released in 1692.
Oh, wow.
On Leap Day.
On Leap Day.
So that was Tituba, Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne. The warrants were released for them.
I know her name.
Naya's eyes are lighting up. What's going on?
Where do I know her name from? I mean, she's probably very famous, but I feel like...
So they were arrested. Their accusations then led to the execution of Osborne and Good. It's incredibly unjust, obviously, the witch trials.
I agree.
And Tituba was actually released in the end because she, after being jailed for a while, because she admitted to what obviously didn't happen. So while Naya finds out where she knows the name Sarah Osborne from, 1940, Hattie McDaniel was also on Leap Day the first African-American to receive an Academy Award.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. She got the Academy Award for her role as Mammy in Gone with the Wind, which was a 1939 film. And it was obviously a big deal for the industry because of how discriminatory it had been previously and also was at that point.
Yeah.
So for an African-American to receive an award like this, it was a big deal. And then, more recently, the last Leap Day that we've had, I keep going to say leap year because that's so ingrained in my brain, but the last Leap Day that we've had, the US or Trump went to, I believe Trump wasn't actually there, but the Doha Accord was signed in Doha between the US and the Taliban to bring an end to the Afghanistan war, which had been going on for 20 years at that point. And the US started their last large-scale withdrawal of troops. So that was also what happened on the last Leap Day that we've had. So a few little things from Leap Days across history.
Yeah.
Slightly less political, except the last one maybe. And then, yeah, there you go.
There you go. I wonder with the political ones whether they think, oh, it's Leap Day, let's do it on Leap Day, it's significant, or whether, oh, yes, on Friday I'm going to sign this agreement.
Yeah, it does just seem like another ordinary day.
Yeah.
Although, do we have a Leap Day tradition? Is there a tradition that may have come out of...
Oh, that's a great question. So, I have a little bit of a history lesson that I learnt the other day, and I'm trying to move my mic and that's not working, so that I can read what I wrote. Okay, we're going with this kind of angle. Many people may have already heard of the tradition that we can just say it's political, it's probably not, that on Leap Day, and some people say leap years, but I like it being Leap Day, I think that's cooler, that the Irish tradition of women being able to propose to men on Leap Day. And it seems to, all sources point to St. Brigid, I hope I'm saying that right, of Kidcare. And St. Brigid is the patroness saint or mother saint of Ireland, one of the three national saints, St. Patrick, everyone knows him, and St. Columba. According to folklore, Brigid insisted that St. Patrick allow women to propose to men at some point, because at that time only men could propose to women. We're talking eons and eons ago. It was suggested that it could happen once every 4 years on Leap Day.
She suggested that to him?
Yes, she suggested that to him.
Okay.
Because he was like, no, women can't propose. That's weird. But when he did eventually agree to this, legend has it that being a Leap Day itself, Brigid immediately proposed to him. However, he declined. And as a result, he gave her a pure silk gown. And thus it became tradition that should a man refuse a woman's proposal on Leap Day, he must buy her a silk gown.
That's interesting because you told me another story.
Mm-hmm. We get there.
All right.
There's more about clothing to leap year than you may expect. So other than, you know, we don't know whether or not this is true, but this seems to be where it dates back to. There are questions about it because Brigid seems to be, when you line up the folklore, about 10 years old when this is supposed to have occurred. So it's not lining up. But there's also some talk that it headed across the sea to Scotland and that in 1288, so it's a couple of years back, Queen Margaret of Scotland enacted a law stating that women could propose on leap days, yes, but a woman must wear a red petticoat if she wanted to propose, and men could be fined if they declined.
Any knowledge on the amount?
No, no, but they could be fined. I wonder if that was up to the woman.
Whoa,
disappointment right. level. Again, the dates don't match up as she was only 5 years old in 1288. But, you know, she's got big ideas, as you said, though, five leap years old.
She could have been born in a leap year.
She could have been. See, there we go. She was actually 20 years old. That'd be pretty cool. But as I mentioned to you before the show, other traditions say that it was brought about some by St. Patrick and some say it was brought about by Queen Margaret with her whole red petticoat thing, that a man must buy a woman a fur coat, which is presumably because it's valuable. But others say she must be bought several pairs of gloves, which would hide the fact that the poor woman who was let down is not wearing a wedding ring.
There you
which
go.
I think is absolutely brilliant. And I found a couple of fun traditions around the world, which ties into our little segment, What's Happening in the World. But according to One News in New Zealand, quote, for many decades, a handful of towns in the US state of Illinois would replace its council members, police officers and firefighters with women every February 29, where they would arrest unmarried men. That tradition appears to have ended in 1980. Presumably those towns now have women on the council, police force and fire service all year round.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, all crazy traditions. There's a couple that I found. The most interesting one I thought was Germany, which is sweet because it ties into their May Day tradition.
Yeah. Erster Mai. Yeah.
Yeah, and they have the birch tree that gets put on the doorstep, and vice versa then on leap day. The women get to do that. There's a lot of women getting to do things that traditionally men do.
Yeah, right.
On leap day. But biggest takeaway, some people think it's good luck, some people don't. China thinks it's a lucky year and they give it a whole extra month every 3 years instead of a day every four because wow. They rotate, they operate on a solar lunar calendar. Whereas many other countries have said it's unlucky. So don't start big things like marriages on a leap year.
Yeah, wow.
Have you got a take on that? Do you feel like 2024 is going to be a lucky year?
Well, I've started the radio in 2024.
Oh, dear.
So who knows
please
where that's going.
Please stay on air. Please stay on air. We're going to stay on air this year.
I could be a bad omen, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, touch wood.
Yeah, we can all hear the knocking.
Yes, well, get in touch with us on our socials. Do you think leap years are lucky or unlucky? And do you have a fun leap year tradition? And have you proposed to someone on a leap year?
On a leap day.
On a leap day, yes, yeah, sorry. Leap year, that doesn't count.
We'd love to hear
leap
it.
Leap day. We would love to hear that. Let's jump to a song before we move on to ASIO. Have you got any final comments?
No final comments. Enjoy your leap day. Enjoy your sunny afternoon.
Yes, and here's to autumn coming tomorrow. Well, technically today. Apparently it starts today, but I refuse to let it start on a day
really?
That's not my
okay.
birthday.
No, if it's Feb, it's summer. That's my rule.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of years ago, because my birthday is 1st of March, I was always like, I'm the start of autumn. But then in the calendar, it said autumn started on the 29th. And I said, no, I start
yeah.
autumn.
Well, we have to say a happy big happy birthday. That was, we've gone the wrong way around to Naya as well before we jump to the song.
Yes, I'll expect that. All right, this is None at the Airport by Meron Jean. You're listening to Sin. We are back, and what song was that? Because
that
I
was
genuinely don't remember.
Angie McMahon with Fish.
And was that a song that you requested to go on the system?
I didn't cue Fish, but I do like Angie McMahon.
Ah, there we
Angie
go, McMahon's there we
good, go. She's touring Australia soon, I believe.
Oh, really? Are you going to go see her?
I haven't actually bought a ticket, but she did release new shows, so I might do that.
Sounds good. We'll be checking in.
Yeah, we'll be checking in.
All right. So now we move to one of the biggest pieces of news I think that I was hearing today, but I look forward to seeing whether or not this really transpires. And I feel that about a lot of news that like bursts onto our systems and then we're like, oh my goodness, this is so big, And then sometimes the next big piece of news tomorrow will be like, we won't think about this ever again. But ASIO, the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, for those that like their acronyms, has revealed an international spy ring recruited an Australian politician who has since resigned. Not since this was revealed. They were a resigned politician. This was many years ago. They didn't specify how many years ago.
Were they a politician at the time that they were recruited? Yes, they were in Parliament.
Yes.
And now they resigned.
And now they have resigned. They're a former politician. One plot from the spy ring was allegedly to introduce the foreign handlers to a member of a prime minister's family. We do not know which prime minister. We do not know which term of government this was. ASIO boss Mike Burgess said in his speech in Canberra that they had, quote, sold out their country, party and former colleagues to advance the interests of the foreign regime. This was in a speech given, I believe it was last night in Canberra, when the ASIO do their risks assessment speech. And I'm just going to jump to now, hopefully this is going to work.
Pretty big words, right? We should hear what they've got to say.
Yeah, we have a snippet from Sabra Lane's ABC Radio Melbourne AM show, and it is a quote from Burgess last night. Let's hope this works properly for us.
This politician sold out their country, party, former colleagues to advance the interests of a foreign regime. At one point, the former politician even proposed bringing a prime minister's family member into the spies. All others did.
Those are some very big words, and that's pretty much what we just said.
Pretty ruthless way that he came out and talked about it as well.
Yeah, so he had, prior to that, I listened to a bit of this speech and I've had a look at some post assessments of the speech. He was talking a lot about how the threat has increased, but not necessarily in the manner that we see threats increasing. It's not just an increase in, like, so-called likelihood of terrorism, those sorts of things. There's much more...
This is the security threat to Australia, you mean?
Yeah, quite generally. The security threat is much more nuanced now. There's more... because technology and our laws are growing in their ability to pick up things, the people who do manage to, quote-unquote, get through the system would therefore be more experienced, more well-researched, cleverer, because they are managing to get through a lot of security. The ABC released an article earlier today in which they quoted Burgess saying afterwards, when he was talking to journalists, that the person would, quote, not be stupid enough to repeat what they've done in the past, and that's due to the foreign interference laws which have come in since that happened. And so it's assumed that it would have been, in that case, I'm drawing from that it would have been picked up on had it happened now. That's not to say things like this can't happen now.
But it's also, I was reading about this too, and it's not, I mean, we'll get to Joe Hockey and his thoughts on this, and also what a lot of other politicians have said, and particularly about the identity of this traitor, so-called traitor.
Yeah.
And this spy. The identity hasn't been released, which is a big part of this, but... one thing that came out of it is actually the way that they're stupid enough, not stupid enough to do it again, is because ASIO actually had a spy or a counter intelligence officer that was then working to sort of get into this A team, I believe they called it.
Yeah.
And infiltrate the spy ring that was working.
Yeah.
And the reason that they wouldn't be so stupid enough to do it again is because that's how they interfered. That's
yes,
the way
okay.
that I've read it as well.
Yeah.
So they sort of were the A team, or the spy network, and this former politician was looking to recruit other people to become a part of this foreign intelligence plot. And now ASIO have been able to take a hard line and say that nothing, this won't happen again, and that you've been found out, and that's the situation from now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yes, as you said,
what do politicians have to say?
Joe Hockey had a lot to say. He was interviewed on both ABC Radio Melbourne, which I heard, and I heard a recording of him being interviewed by, I believe, Patricia Karvelas on RN this morning. So he was getting around to all those stations talking about this. And he had a lot to say on the matter. I will let you listen for yourselves before I say anything about that, and then we'll chat about his and other people's reactions. Let me just make sure we get right to the start of the recording. This is Joe Hockey.
It besmirches everyone that has served their nation in the parliament, but what's more, it forces us to ask serious questions. Who is this person? Did we work with them in the parliament? Did they ever approach us about an issue? What did we discuss with them? What did they do with that information? It's not good enough to be in the hold of the intelligence agencies. They need to let everyone know.
So that was on Sabra Lane's ABC Radio Melbourne AM show as well. And he said, as well as this, I respect the... that's Richard Miles. Sorry, he was demanding that they come out, but he said that... what did he say? Right after this, he was talking about... So it's not good enough for them to have it. He was pretty much... I can't remember the exact words, but there was a calling out for everyone to have access to who this person is.
He wouldn't stop short. He said he wouldn't stop short that everyone will be considered a traitor until the name is released.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the opposition, namely, have come out and said that the name of the person who so-called betrayed Australia to foreign spies, so, for example, the former or the opposition foreign affairs spokesman currently, Simon Birmingham, wants the government to release the information. And a lot of other MPs, Peter Dutton is also, the leader of the opposition, has also backed up this claim.
Yeah.
And this is the identity of this politician is speculated to be someone that was a former Labor MP in New South Wales. That's the current speculation.
But it is just that.
It is just speculation. Because we will state that.
Yeah, because there was someone on, I think it was AM, or it might have been Breakfast this morning, ABC Radio Melbourne, talking about how they realised when they were hearing this that it's so concerning, because they can fully believe that it is, I think it was a Liberal person speaking, that it could be a Liberal colleague, it could be a Labor opposition, but either way they are still a government member of the government.
Yeah. And have access to some pretty,
and I do wonder if, other than keeping, which we will get to this more in depth, but other than keeping the actual person safe by concealing their identity, I do have the concern that should they bring the identity out, make it public, how much that will reflect on the party itself, when it seems to be much more of an individual at fault than a party at fault. It is very, very unlikely that a party would betray a nation like that.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine what it could do to polls should it come out that it was one way or the other, and regardless of where they were in the nation.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It's a big story.
Massive, massive deal. So on the other hand, we've got Joe Hockey calling for the name to come out. Richard Miles said he supported ASIO's decision. He said, quote, I respect the decision ASIO has made on this. What we take from this is just the threat that exists and the importance for all of us who are involved in what we do, everyone involved in public administration. So he said not just people who are, you know, in politics, in the party, in the room. And I think that sort of is essentially the point of giving this anecdote, ASIO giving this anecdote, is here's security risk and how our security risk is much more internal, much more intimate now.
Closer to
home. And here is an example of how this has happened, and this is what we need to essentially look out for and be more cautious about. They did actually give advice. He said, so Burgess, so again, the leader of ASIO, offered advice to intelligence officers, asking them not to, quote, make yourselves an easy target, and instead please be smart and discreet, because he said there'd been a lot of people he'd seen on various sites claiming to be intelligence officers, which is something you don't do. I mean, my mum has friends who she could guess works for ASIO. She wouldn't know, but she guesses works for ASIO because they work for the government. But there are huge rules about privacy.
Of course.
And so, look, we don't know whether the people on these sites were just saying, oh, I'm a government official.
In the last couple of years, though, ASIO has also become more of a... They've had more of a public presence.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in releasing these things, I think it's also suggesting the way that ASIO has become more inclined to express or to state things in public.
Yeah.
It does a lot, actually, to, as you were saying, sort of make people aware of the risks that are involved in government and the risk, make politicians more accountable for sort of their relationships and the things that they have with sort of businesses or with foreign governments or with officials. And I think it does a lot, actually, in stating this story, not just to protect national security, but also to hold politicians accountable for the people that they might be dealing with and the influences that might be at play.
Yeah, and that ties into the constant talk about establishing bodies of corruption, anti-corruption bodies in all levels of politics to prevent... I mean, this isn't necessarily corruption as we've seen it, but it's the same sort of
I think it shows
wheelhouse.
Good work.
Yeah.
An organisation outside the government that's looking into the government, I guess.
Well, it's interesting you speak of organisations outside the government. He did make a note about how this happens and saying it's often, so that they're always external. It was an external spy organisation. And he said the spies pose as consultants, headhunters, local government officials, academics and think tank researchers claiming to be from fictional companies such as Data 31. More commonly, they offer their targets consulting opportunities, promising to pay thousands of dollars for reports on Australian trade, politics, economy, foreign policy, defence and security. So essentially...
That was Mike Burgess. Right?
Yeah, that was Mike Burgess. And essentially, politicians could be hoodwinked into this sort of thing.
Yeah, of course.
Which is, yes, scary, but also these are very educated people who would be trying against this. But I do wonder, perhaps... the anti-corruption agency can help screen this sort of thing, even for... Because, I don't know, this might be just personally how I viewed it. When I see people reacting to anti-corruption agencies, I think a lot of people see it as an attack on our government. They're saying, oh, well, you know, you don't trust the government if you want an anti-corruption agency. This is just people on the street. I'm not saying politicians are saying this. But this sort of thing... would offer a side-by-side aid to the government to prevent this sort of thing and to protect other government officials from essentially what we heard Joe Hockey, saying they wouldn't have to do the who was I with, who did I talk to, did I share any information that maybe I wouldn't have shared if I was worried about someone. It's many, many questions. But yes,
yeah.
So we might hear more on this. He also talked about Gaza and heightened community tensions, but that's because it was a speech about all sorts of things. But this seemed to be the real takeaway was who is this person?
Parliament's been talking about this all day, I believe. So
yeah.
I think that a lot more will come out of this in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
It does seem like Joe Hockey and a lot of Liberals are not backing down and they're still wanting to claim for that identity to come out. But we'll find out whether it dies down, as you were saying, whether it's a news story that's going to sort of get pushed under as the next thing comes up tomorrow, or whether it's something that's really going to come to the centre.
Yeah, it'd be worth seeing whether we do see some heightened work within the government on privacy and national security at that level.
With ASIO, I actually looked into whether things like this have happened before.
Oh.
And ASIO themselves have been infiltrated.
Now, I heard about this, but I didn't read on it.
So back in the 70s and 80s, in the midst of the Cold War, just sort of as this came up in the news, I thought I'd go back and have a little bit of a look. But ASIO finally in 2014 admitted that they had been infiltrated in the 70s and 80s, and there had been moles within and whole operations. And this all came out as there was a look into the writing of the official history of ASIO that period.
Yeah.
Now, the new history that was written sort of conclusively stated that it was infiltrated by Soviet spies. And I've actually got, if anyone's interested in a former or extra infiltration into ASIO or spy stories in Australian government, there's a recommendation I've got, which is on Listener Podcasts. It's called... I've been listening to it, but I've forgotten the name. Listener Podcasts... spies, there you go. Secrets We Keep. Thank you. Secrets We Keep. And the journalist that's done it, the journalist that's done this series, it's actually released its one of its major episodes yesterday, I believe. But the journalist that's done this one is Joey Watson and Claire Weaver. And they've done a really great job, in my opinion. I've been listening through it, so shout out. Yeah, that.
Yeah, some good listening material there. I'll have to have a listen to that.
And we'll see what happens with the ASIO.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was that long before they came out and said something about it.
There's a lot of history to it, and there's a lot of still some people that have got pretty strong takes on it. So,
yeah. Oh, well, I'll have to read up, and we'll revisit this next week.
Yeah. See how we go.
All right. So any final comments on ASIO, spies, the government, Joe Hockey?
Just keen to see what happens next. That's
I'd be keen to see an overall Labor response from it, because we are seeing a lot of Liberal response from it. So that'll be very interesting. We're going to jump to a song. It's almost 5 o'clock, which means we get to return to the news. And then we'll be chatting, we'll be jumping straight into our What's Happening in the World. We're talking about Spain and Guinea. Very exciting. All right, this is April Fool's Day. Hang on. No. It is Leap Day. Can't have two celebrations. Anyway, yes, this is April Fool's Day by Moonchild Sonelli. You're listening to Sin.
Welcome back, everyone. That was the... could you please announce that song for me?
Sure.
It was the live version. That's why we heard
that
the clapping at the end.
That was the live version.
And it was Archie Roach.
Of...
Feet Titus.
Where is it gone?
Archie Roach, Feet Titus.
Why is it
Titus.
Not here? What if I do that? Oh, my goodness.
And we don't know...
I will find it and we will back announce it.
Credit
before we front announce
the next song. Now, jumping into the news for today, this is your news hit for the 29th of February, Thursday. Albanese poll shock, Labor primary falls as government spruiks tax cuts. The South Australian government has signed an agreement to sell hydrogen to a company that owns the Walia Steelworks in the state's Upper Spencer Gulf. New data suggests that adults without concession cards might be finding it harder to find a GP that bulk bills. As more high-income households have shifted into the private rental market, low-income renters are struggling to compete and many are retreating to informal living arrangements. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has declared the government won't do a deal with the Greens to pass its Help to Buy housing scheme, which the minor party says will make Australia's housing crisis worse. This week, Scott Morrison has left politics. WA Liberal leader Libby Metem dismisses her deputy leader Steve Thomas after it emerges he used disgraced former Premier Brian Burke as a middleman to secure a meeting. Mark Butler has held a press conference to launch the government's new influencer-led anti-vaping campaign. Good correction there. Victoria has been facing extreme weather conditions as Ballarat,
Beaufort,
Dereal fires are still out of control, Firefighters have spent the night battling two bushfires in Victoria's west after a tense day for thousands of residents as temperatures soared across the state and more than 30,000 people were told to evacuate as a precaution due to the catastrophic fire danger rating. Thank you. That was your news hit for Thursday 29th.
And that song we just had was Archie Roach performing, oh my goodness, where has this gone again? Sorry.
Archie Roach performing
The River Song featuring Titus. And correct, it was the live version. Now this is 3D Country by Geese. You're listening to Sienna. We'll be back with What's On in the World in about 8 minutes. We're back. What song was that?
I can definitely get this back announcing right. That was Caroline Polachek. Welcome to my island. Didn't get it right. There you go. I'm going to have to learn that one pretty good. But, yeah, without a stutter. Right. We are back and we're here to talk about what's going on in the world.
Speaking of islands.
Well, should we start with the Philippines? Because we did this last week. And Mr. Bong Bong Marcus Jr. has been in Australia. We didn't know, but he turned up today in Parliament and was here to address the Parliament. We've been talking, or I haven't personally, but Australian politicians have been talking with Mr. Bong Bong Marcus Jr. in Parliament, the Prime Minister of... Prime Minister, is that correct? We learnt this last week.
Yes, Prime Minister. Oh, no, sorry, President. President. They run under a
President of the Philippines. There you go.
Not monarchy.
He's the 17th current President of the Philippines. Now, he was in Australia to talk and to address the Parliament. He talked about the security risks in Southeast Asia and sort of in the South China Sea. He talked about in Asia particularly what role Australia plays and that it's in both of Australia's interests to... preserve their relationship, and in particular the ASEAN or ASEAN meeting. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal for both countries, and he's looking forward to that meeting. ASEAN is a summit that's held. I'm not sure how often, but it happens between. So it's called the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, of which. 10 countries come together in Southeast Asia and they discuss sort of political ideas. A lot of the leaders go. So he's been in Australia. He's been to Parliament, warmly addressed, given, have read reports, the red carpet treatment. So after we spoke about the Philippines last week, maybe we're going to speak, as we speak about Spain and Guinea today, maybe we will see the presidents or prime ministers yet to find out.
We're making it happen.
Yeah, everything's happening. We should just take over the foreign affairs for Australia.
There we go. Represent becomes the foreign affairs minister.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Write it in. So, today, shall I start with Spain?
Definitely.
So, Spain, for those that don't know, is in Europe. Brownie points for that one. Yeah, who would have thought?
Are you sure?
Now, Spain's political system is, so in the sunny old Spain, they run under a constitutional monarchy, just like...
I feel like I know a country that's the same.
Canada?
Oh, yeah.
No. Just like Australia.
just going to draw that out.
Yeah. From the end of the Spanish Civil War, though, in 1939 to 1975, although it was technically still a constitutional monarchy or they had a monarchy situation going on, General Francisco Franco was the ruler and it was a dictatorship.
Okay.
As described. So he might have... He appointed all the people that were sitting.
Yeah.
Even though... And there was a constitution, but... Basically, Franco's rule was what Franco says goes was the situation. And that was quite a brutal dictatorship at the time. And since Franco's death in 1975, Spain almost immediately transitioned. So I think it took them under 3 years to sort of get through all the processes to become like a completely democratic constitution. So have a democratic constitution where they now have a prime minister, they have elected ministers, and they also have their monarch who serves similar to us, I'm using quotation marks, as an apolitical head of state. And lately, so that's all been in sort of the late 20th century and early 21st century, but lately in 2023, Spain underwent an election where it was called pretty early by the prime minister at the time. And post-election, Spain, although a lot of what was quite good to hear was that a lot of support for the right wing in Spain dropped after that election. So the Vox party is the far right wing party in Spain. And this is kind of amidst a lot of other European nations falling to right wing governments and right wing nationalism sort of rising within Europe. It was a kind of positive to see that Spain had not gone down that path. Although that occurred, where there was this positive shift, it did leave Spain in a bit of a hole, and there was a deadlock for months where no major party could get the numbers to form a coalition. So Pedro Sanchez is now the prime minister, but he cut his socialist party, worked with hard left parties and cut deals, particularly those that were advocating for independence in both Catalan and Basque countries, to get into to form a what do we call it? Coalition. Form a coalition and get to government. Now, giving a little bit more backstory to this, these deals that he's cut, one was an amnesty deal to pardon someone that had tried to get a referendum going for independence, which is illegal in Catalonia, which was illegal at the time that he did it. He fled the country. Now they were looking for
the referendum was illegal.
The guy who organized that fled the country, and now there's amnesty deals going on. Basically, Pedro Sanchez is just trying to hold on to power, and it's quite unpopular within Spain. Now, the future is quite interesting because it means that it's really hard for Spain to govern, and currently they're going on. They've got a few big political concerns, namely drought is really taking over the country, climate change is affecting them, angry farmers are going on, are protesting a lot because they're not getting enough support. And so Spain has been and probably will continue to be, like other European countries, in a bit of a moment of political instability and a bit of a shift going on. So that's the latest from Spain.
Wow. It sounds very similar to, we've been seeing those protests in France from farmers.
And Germany too as well.
Yeah, there we go. That'll be next week.
I think a common story across Europe has been sort of a rise of right-wing nationalism or an instability that's been created by sort of sectional support for right-wing areas of the government or right-wing parties. A lot of instability that may be causing this, so from inflation rates going up, from questions about where the money of the EU has been going and what's happening with the EU, and also with the farmers and with train systems and a lot of protests going on. And I think that this sort of instability is not unique to Spain. So it will be interesting to see what other countries sort of follow suit and how, like, socialist parties, like Pedro Sanchez's party, will be able to hold on to power or form functioning governments, basically. Yeah.
That is fascinating. So they've been, I presume, with the Vox party, so they've been sitting more right-wing and have come towards middle.
The Vox party never held the government.
They didn't hold government, but they had more support.
Major influence, yeah.
So they've moved.
It was a concerning rise, basically.
Yeah, okay.
And this is alongside the Conservative Party in Spain, which is the other major party, which was the other party that was at this period during last year in 2023, was the party that was attempting to form other governments and work with other parties.
And do they sit more on the middle left?
So the Socialist Party sits on the middle left. the people that the Socialist Party, which are now in government, that's Pedro Sanchez, they're hard left.
Yeah.
Okay. These are the ones that he's cut deals with.
That's interesting.
So it's a left wing government at the moment. Yeah. So a socialist to a left wing government. Whereas on the right, the conservatives sit obviously centre right, and then the Vox Party is far right.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because we would say we have a left leaning or a right leaning government, but they've got their far left in government.
Look, I don't want to be quoted misquoting. I've done my research on Spain, but I wouldn't say that. So the countries that they've definitely cut deals with are hard left and have been described as hard left.
So these
are
the regional ones. With hard
the regions that they've cut deals with. Are hard left. So that's Catalonian and Basque regional parties. These parties have long had tensions with the idea of like Spain and its monarchy, and have during the Franco rule also had tensions. So then they've also considered themselves separate in many regards from other parts of Spain.
Yeah.
So that's where the tensions have arisen, and they're hard left, whereas the Socialist Party that's in government now sits probably more centre left, so leaning left.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. Oh, to be in Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be... Seems they'd be hot. Going to...
Seems hot over there. Drought.
Yeah.
I was reading about the drought.
Isn't it meant to be winter?
Yes, I believe at the moment it's probably reasonably okay. They're probably still going on with winter at the moment. We should find out what temperature in Madrid. Madrid temperature. It is 4 degrees currently.
I mean, you can still have a drought in winter.
Right.
But I'd be okay if it was 4 degrees at the moment. What's the temperature outside right now here? I don't know. Let's have a look. Melbourne. Going to do some journalistic comparisons.
It's nighttime in Spain. I'm getting reports that it's 0 degrees and it feels like -2. That's in Madrid. Let's try Valencia, like typically known for being hot area.
Okay.
Valencia currently is 8 degrees, but today
is double.
Right, double. And during the day it'll reach 18 or 20. So that's still pretty hot for an area that's in the peak of winter, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, it is 21 degrees here.
Okay, so
it's
we're
a lot
on
warmer
par.
Here.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anything else from Spain?
Nothing from Spain.
Well, let's have a look at the time. Let's jump to, hang on, how long is that song?
Should we do one song?
Let's do one song. This is Blurry featuring Sampa the Great by Petite Noire. You're listening to Sin. We are back with our final segment, and we pronounced that song anyway, but that was Blurry featuring Sampa the Great by Petite Noire. And our final segment of today, Guinea is a country in the west of Africa. It has direct access to the Atlantic Ocean, which is also where its capital, Conakry, was built. It's built on the port. And it has borders shared with Guinea-Bissau, Senegal, Mali. Now, I did Google the pronunciation.
Is.
Yep. I was like, just gonna guess on that one, but
also
no,
known as the Ivory Coast in English.
How's that?
Yeah.
And I've heard about that before, but I'd heard the name, but I hadn't heard anything about it. Liberia and Sierra Leone. So, we have a history lesson. Let's see how much we'll get through. Guinea is considered I loved this phrase on Wikipedia. Presidential Representative Democratic Republic.
Whoa.
Which is just a whole lot of long words, but essentially means they operate under a separation of powers. They have the executive branch and the legislative branch. They have, when they've been working properly, they have had a president, which is voted in by the people in a democratic manner, and the president of Guinea at times has been both the head of state and the head of government. Very complicated. There have been a lot of changes. So essentially, they have... These are just the phrases you want to know, because they don't have this very often. They have the government, which holds their executive power. So when they have a government, that's what they do. And they have a national assembly frequently, which shares legislative power with the government. You will hear that a lot, but you'll also hear when they don't have that. So, for 25 years, more than 25 years, sorry, President Sékou Touré led Guinea in a one-party state. He was the head of the Democratic Party of Guinea, which is actually the PDG because it's the Parti Démocratique Guinea in the French. When he died in 1984, which is pretty much where our story starts for today, the PDG was abolished and replaced by the military with the Military Committee for National Recovery. This was a military transition government. You're going to hear that a lot. So this is what I found really interesting. There is a lot of military coming in, but also military then going out again and coming in again. They don't seem to be grabbing, holding. They come in when essentially you could say they're needed to fix something. They received a new constitution in 1991, and it became an era of what was known as civilian rule, which is what you'd say we've got. A civilian president, a unicameral system, which is different to ours.
When it's elected.
And one chamber, unicameral. This one chamber was the National Assembly. Keywords. The president and legislators would henceforth be elected on five-year terms by the people. Political parties, so to speak, became legal in 92, and then in 93 they held their first multi-party election. Lansana Conte was elected president. He was re-elected twice in 98 and 03 by the people. They had a referendum in 2001, which altered the presidential term from 5 to 7 years and allowed unlimited presidential terms. So, interlude, the US in 1951... had the second amendment. They now have the second amendment of 22nd, not the second, 22nd amendment of the Constitution, which limits a president to holding only two terms of office, and those are four-year terms of office.
Considering how much power a president usually gets, it's pretty important that you do that.
Yeah, so this was unlimited seven-year terms, which essentially you could be president forever. Conte then, I feel like we're having a theme of leaders dying, died in 2008, and the country was then led by a military junta, which essentially paused the constitution. Well, they did pause it, and then dissolved the legislature. So they dissolved the government. Another transitional body was created similar to that of 1984, and it was known as the National Council for Democracy and Development.
Okay.
It had 32 selected members. Thus, the junta led the government with the assistance of this council and a prime minister. I've noticed countries, and I mean, we talked about this in Spain, have a president and a prime minister. I was not aware that that was a thing that could happen, but you learn things every day.
Well, in Spain, it's the monarch, but
yeah,
in other countries, they usually do a president as well.
Yeah. So at this point, they ruled under the 2020 constitution, which had Guinea. Oh, sorry, I need to jump. I jumped forward a little bit. In 2010, the National Transitional Council was formed under this junta, who was with a prime minister and the assistance council, and they were tasked with creating a new constitution. And then in 2020, they got a new constitution, another new constitution. Now they rule under the 2020 constitution, which leaves Guinea as a unitary republic. The president is the head of the state. They can only hold office as president for 2 terms, each of which is 6 years. So we've got a bit of a middle ground.
Yeah.
They also have a prime minister, which I think is the best of both worlds, who is appointed by the president. Legislators are again voted upon by the nation and are seated in the unicameral, so one-chamber legislature, or, you guessed it, the National Assembly. We're back again. They may hold unlimited 5-year terms. I thought it was really interesting that the presidential term is 6, and that's 5, and that could be a mistake, but what I read. However, in 2021, they underwent a military coup. So nobody died this time. The last 2 times the military have stepped in have been the death of their president. So they underwent a military coup, and after only 18 months, the 2020 constitution was paused, similar to the last time. A transitional charter was issued. The president would be head of state, a prime minister who was head of government, and again, a national transitional council, which was the legislative body, appointed. So, that was where we were. And fun fact, all of this started exactly 40 years ago in 27 days, because the first president that we talked about...
So on March 26th.
Yeah, March 26th, he died. So that's
a lot of changes.
They really fluctuate, and it seems to be this real cycle of the president leads until they die. When they die, they don't have someone to succeed them. They don't seem to... I don't know if it's they don't have a plan in place, but the military steps in and says, okay, we're going to have a time of change, time of flux, which... By all accounts, I'm not seeing it as terribly unproductive because they do get back to government. But in another way, you've got a period of a transitional council, not an actual legislative or national assembly, which is passing legislature. So it actually really could be quite a bad pause. Can't imagine us having that happen here. But it was also interesting to see the military described as sort of stepping in rather than taking power.
Yes. Of course. That's different to what we've seen with, for example, Pakistan or other countries that we've looked at, where the military comes in and aims to hold power, whereas in this case it's very much, it seems to be very much that it's a transitional, well, it's been the name, National Transitional Council, or other examples where the military comes in and they're really looking to establish some sort of system where there's a little bit more... lineage.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's happening now? I'll give you some context before I talk about what has just happened. Perfect timing for a segment on this. So just a note, they became independent in 1958, because they do reference since independence. On October 2nd, they rejected Imperial France's loi cadre, which is a legal reform which detailed relations between France and its empire across the globe, and they said no thanks and left. So quick overview, healthcare, they have reduced infant and child mortality to approximately half of what it was in the 50s or 60s in what they were calling their post-independence period. According to Britannica, they struggle with low numbers of trained medical practitioners and access to materials in order to support their healthcare. And most welfare is provided by extended family, which we do see in a lot of countries. We see family members stepping in rather than, say, we have aged care homes here. No, a family member would step in, and if they don't, then there really is no one. Housing crisis, nothing new, unfortunately. But a fifth of their country's population, which in 2021 was approximately 13.53 million, according to World Bank, lives in Conakry, which is the national capital. Before Touré's death in 1984, where what I'm saying our story seems to start, private schools had been banned but were then able to reopen. That's a bit of a fun fact. Now, just under one-third of the population aged over 15 is literate, which is considered below average for Western Africa. So that's more than two-thirds of the population are illiterate.
That's a lot.
That is really huge. Okay, so that's just a bit of context for how we're going in the country now. Recently, according to the BBC and other sources, but it was pretty recent, so I'll cite the sources as I go, there were reports of unrest in the capital of Guinea after last Monday, Colonel, and I may butcher this name, Mamadi Doumbouya, dissolved the government.
Giving a thumbs up on that one was a good effort. for dissolving the government, on the pronunciation of the name, it will be clear.
Al Jazeera published an article last Tuesday stating, quote, military leaders released a video statement late on Monday to say that directors of cabinet, secretary generals and their deputies would be in charge until a new government was formed. So I find it interesting that they kind of go through this crisscross phase where, when the military steps in, they kind of work with but also above the current government. The government was only formed and elected in 2022, so it's still, I suppose it's not really new anymore, but they run on five-year terms, so it's still in its first 2 years. The news was delivered by Secretary General Amara Kamara. I really hope I wrote that right, but reading it out loud, I really like that name. it is still unclear, quote says Al Jazeera's article, how the dissolution would immediately affect the country. It is also unclear, according to the BBC, as to why the dissolution has occurred. They haven't given a reason. Dumboya had previously taken power during the 2021 coup.
Yeah.
He offered no explanation for the dissolvement of the government. He has allegedly also ordered passports of former ministers to be seized and their bank accounts have been frozen. So again, we're sort of sitting here going, why is this happening?
Who left in the dark?
And there's been some cross-contamination over the seas. Media in Guinea reported this decision had led to the Russian embassy addressing Russian nationals living in Guinea about the unrest and potential danger. And Russian Ambassador Alexei Popov has apologized, according to the media in Guinea. So this is Guinean outlets being then cross-reported by the BBC. He said, quote, "I explained that it was a misunderstanding, a false translation of what was published. The announcement was published only in Russian for Russian citizens," the BBC reported that. And so what's interesting is, so Guinea has gone, gotten a bit on the defense with Russia because of that warning about potential tensions and danger. But Guinea's one of a few French colonies, or what used to be French colonies in West Africa, that have been hit by military coups in the last few years. And Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso have all, according to the BBC, shown hostility towards France and what's known as, I assume this is read out, but it could be ECOWAS, but I feel like you'd say ECOWAS.
Yeah.
Which is the Economic Community of West African States, which is being called the West African Regional Bloc. And these countries have turned towards Russia.
So they're looking for Russia for economic aid and shifting away from French.
Yeah, so they've already left the French Empire, however many years each of them was. But they have turned to Russia, but Guinea sort of got the hunches, like the haunches up when that statement came out. Like, understandably, it did sound, it could sound like an attack on Guinea to say, oh, you should be careful. But it also makes sense for an ambassador to be sending that message. Yeah. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think especially in a time of political upheaval, the Russian guy's probably just trying to explain to the people, but it does send, yeah, it's a little bit rude, I would say. Yeah, as far as diplomatics go, or diplomacy, I would say that the diplomat there has not done his job so well. It's interesting that, yeah, that there's a shift in Africa, or West Africa in particular, away from sort of maybe European and
it's worth noting they speak French.
They speak French as well.
They're moving away from France.
So and then turning to other influences. I think there's also been reports of, maybe not in West Africa in particular, but other African countries where, similar in Southeast Asia, but where China is playing a big role in having influence. So where the money comes in from and where the deals are cut is another big part of it, yeah.
Yeah. What I found, I think, most interesting was that Dumboya has promised to regain elections by the end of 2024. Now, this sort of confused me, and I had to read it a couple of times. So essentially, almost 2 years ago, ECOWAS, because I'm going with that, and Guinea, or the junta in Guinea, set a 24-month transition period, another one. I've said transition so many times. Meaning that in 10 months from now, when the year ends, Guinea must return to civilian rule. There was, according to a couple of news outlets, some protests in the capital after yesterday, the 26th, an open strike, so an open-ended strike, allegedly began. Some people are saying it's attempting to end media censorship. This began exactly a week after the junta dissolved the government. A quote from Yahoo News, take with it what you will, is schools, shops, markets and roads were empty early Monday in Conakry, which is presumably unusual. I'm imagining it being like empty in Melbourne or Sydney.
Yeah.
And hospitals only offered skeletal services as youths set up barricades on arterial thoroughfares.
Wow.
And allegedly clashes broke out and people were injured. Protests like this have been rare under the junta, and there have in the past been bans on protests and demonstrations. But that will just be something we'll see, because it's not necessarily apparent that that is a protest against the military stepping in and dissolving the government. But I'm sure we will hear more. Maybe we will get a visit. I'm not sure who would get a visit from. We might get a visit from Dumboya.
Well, we have who to knows? Find out who's
next
the leader week,
next
of the time,
Thursday. Right? Before we go, I have, I don't know if you can hear that, we have our little jar. Would you like to pick your nation for next week?
I will pick my nation for next week. We are doing, drum roll please, we haven't got one.
Oh, hopefully it's not one we've pulled out because I think I put them back in.
Sudan.
Sudan, ooh. Sudan. And I will be bringing you, have I got one? Yes. Sierra Leone.
Ah, nice.
Hang on, doesn't that border?
It does border Guinea.
Ah, well, I'm just going to make my way around.
Yeah.
That actually, and you know how interesting it will be to see how they compare.
Yes.
Whether sharing a border has influenced, has meant they have influence on each other. Now, we better let you all go, and it's been 2 hours.
Enjoy your Thursday. Thursday's a new Friday.
Yeah, it is. Actually, Thursday's a new Tuesday.
Is that true for Represent? Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in. If you've been listening, got any shout-outs to people you know have been listening?
Yes, my mum actually texted in earlier. She told me that I had mispronounced Titus.
We're going with. Okay.
A great Indigenous band that was on the song that the River Song.
Yes, the River Song by Archie Roach.
From Archie Roach, which I butched the back announcing of.
That's okay.
So. Shout out to Titus and shout out to Mum. So thanks for listening.
We'll try and play their songs again next week. Let us know what you thought of the show, and let us know what countries you'd like to see in our What's Happening in the World, because we'd love to be able to bring ones we hear about. We are everywhere, pretty much, Sin Represent, mostly on Twitter/X and Instagram. If you want to hear this episode again or catch up on any of our old episodes, you can find our podcast on Omni, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts at Represent. And as always, remember to
stay political.
You've been listening to a Sin Media podcast, where young people run the show.